Hi, this is Faith Mitchell, President of Grantmakers in Health. I'd like to welcome you to the latest edition in GIH's podcast series. Our goal is to provide you with an insider's view of what's happening on the front lines of health by hearing from leaders in the field. I hope you enjoy these podcasts and find them insightful as you lead your philanthropic work.
Please join me in welcoming this year's Andy Hyman Advocacy Award winner, Bennett Magnuson.
Thank you, Brenda. Can I say what an honor it is to be in this room with all of you and to be receiving the Andy Hyman Award for Advocacy. At the 2017 inaugural presentation of this award, Andy's father talked about the solace that he found, as he said, knowing that millions of Americans who might never know Andy or even know about him will benefit from his contributions. And I am one among those millions who have benefited deeply from Andy's work without really knowing the debt that I owe him. I've heard Andy's work described as far-seeing and passionate, and it's an incredible honor to receive an award that bears his name. So thank you. Thank you also to Grantmakers in Health and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for your support of this award and for health justice advocacy. I think the leadership that's represented in this room is responsible for moving this country forward inch by hard-fought inch, and I am deeply grateful. As Brenda mentioned, I was nominated for this award by Steve Cohen and the Kansas Health Foundation. And I'd like to start by saying a little bit more about the partnership between Kansas Appleseed and the Kansas Health Foundation, as well as the other amazing Kansas foundations that we've had the great luck to work with. Brenda and the Reach Healthcare Foundation, the Sunflower Foundation, the United Methodist Health Ministry Fund, the Health Forward Foundation, and the Wyandotte Health Foundation. It might be a little bit of an understatement to say that Kansas politics have been tumultuous over the past decade. But when faced with the opportunity of either lying low and waiting it out or standing up and speaking out, the Kansas foundations, to their credit, stayed very true to their missions. They asked themselves and their partners very hard questions, and they helped build up a statewide advocacy infrastructure to tackle the long-standing inequities that have been weighing down communities in Kansas. It strikes me that it's probably not a coincidence that it is health foundations that have been leading the way in Kansas to build power, share power, and wield power to advance equity and justice. I think it's because health leaders are really experts at seeing the difference between symptoms and underlying causes. That means that when the folks in this room look at the problems in our community, your training tells you to dig deeper and to really look for the root causes of those problems. And more often than not, when we do trace back the health problems through their tangled roots, in my experience, we often find that it is our laws and political systems that are sitting there at the source of those problems. And I think that would explain why the social determinants of health really do end up being largely synonymous with the political inequities that are draped on race, gender, wealth, disability in our communities. And why it is that health foundations have so effectively embraced policy advocacy. Or to borrow from Jake Williams from Healthier Colorado, who recently phrased it a little bit differently, he said, "Public policy is the only lever with which we can create change at the scale necessary to make a substantial difference." It was a similar line of thinking that led a group of attorneys to start Kansas Appleseed about 20 years ago. They were frustrated because they had pro bono clients who were also tangled up in webs of poverty and discrimination. And as much as they tried to help their clients, often there just didn't seem really to be any way to make any lasting progress for those clients. Or sometimes after spending months or years working hard for that client, they did finally get to a workable solution for that person. But then, before long, they would meet another person with the same problems, and then another person would walk into their office, and another, again and again. And while these attorneys understood the indispensable value of direct service programs, because families in crisis have to have somewhere and somebody to turn to when they have urgent problems, these attorneys also knew that treating the symptoms alone was not going to be enough. They were tired and frustrated with running into the same problems over and over, and tired of having that sinking feeling that their kids and grandkids very likely might run into those same problems again and again themselves. So those attorneys got into a room, they passed the hat, and they started Kansas Appleseed because they decided that if they were truly committed to making justice for all a reality for Kansas families, they had to invest themselves more of their own philanthropic resources into policy advocacy. The toxic stress that our communities are facing on a daily basis is daunting, and advocacy on these issues is almost always, in my experience, a fairly exhausting combination of very high stakes and very low resources, and frankly, can be very stressful and isolating. I have found that the emotional toll many advocates experience can be an uncomfortable thing to talk about. We often shy away from the discussion, but I have been very grateful to learn from the foundations in Kansas just how important it is really to acknowledge that aspect of the work, and equally important that there really are ways to reduce it as an advocacy community. So while they've been investing in advocacy projects to reduce the toxic stress that too many of our neighbors face on a daily basis, the health foundations in Kansas have also increasingly invested in the organizational capacity of advocacy nonprofits. And capacity investments like those are, of course, essential to making lasting progress, because without that kind of investment, we're simply building houses on sand. But they're also essential to reducing the isolation that advocates and those that we work with in the community and at foundations also often face. And the investments from the Kansas foundations have allowed advocates across our state to learn together and support one another. Over the past several years, for example, the Kansas Health Foundation has provided multi-year grants to cohorts of 10 organizations at a time to tackle issues of health equity and voter engagement. And these grantees meet frequently in person to collaborate and get to know each other. And while this has resulted in more collaboration and peer learning, more than that, it's also provided a really important support network of colleagues that you can really trust to open up to and to talk about the very personal side of advocacy. And I can't help but feel that that type of strong philanthropic investment and policy advocacy is perhaps more important now than it ever has been. I don't know if all of you have the same sense that I do, but to me it seems that a kind of almost nihilism seems to be saturating many of the most important political systems in our country at the moment. There seems to be a growing school of thought that argues that public policy can't really address our biggest problems, and that means we're either stuck with chaos or zero-sum us-versus-them politics. But of course, that's simply not true. And I truly believe advocacy is one of our best opportunities to push back and remind people that public policy really can make our lives better and our communities stronger. So take, for example, the juvenile justice system in Kansas that Brenda mentioned. A state review back in 2012 of our main youth prison found horribly unsafe conditions where kids were battered in closets, where kids were able to attempt suicide, and where kids were completely denied an education. And what was deeply concerning was at the time when those reports came out in 2012, our state leaders ignored the public policy aspects of the problem and instead argued that the real problem here was that we had not been hard enough on the kids. So the governor at the time blamed a, quote, failed social services approach for the problems, and a top legislator argued that by the time a kid was sent to the youth prison, the only solution was a more, quote, structured corrections environment. To me, this is a fairly nihilistic approach to the issue. I think it's built on the unspoken assumption that there are some kids who just can't be helped. But it didn't take a lot of digging to realize that those assessments of the problem didn't add up and couldn't possibly be right. For one thing, when we looked into it, nearly half of the kids at that youth prison were there for only non-person offenses. And all the other symptoms that we looked at, the fact that Kansas incarcerated youth at a much higher rate than most other states, the fifth highest rate in the country, it was incarcerating kids at that high of rate, despite having a youth crime rate that was well below the national average. The fact that state funding for community programs had essentially disappeared at the same time that state funding on incarceration had skyrocketed in our state. The fact that an evidence-based assessment of the kids in the juvenile justice system found that only 11% of them registered as having high-risk family problems, and only 6% of them showed a high-risk criminal attitude. So really, all the symptoms that we pointed to, really, we could trace back to the public policy in our state. So to cut to the chase, advocates were able to push the conversation in a better direction. And in 2016, Kansas passed sweeping reforms to our juvenile justice public policy. And a far cry from the nihilistic approach that we saw in 2012, the 2016 reforms have shown that public policy really can improve lives and strengthen our communities. To give you some top-line numbers, since the reforms in 2016, Kansas has seen a 63% decline in youth confinement in our state, including a 30% reduction in the number of youth incarcerated at our state juvenile prison. Absolutely something worth celebrating. And to me, importantly, those successes have been spread out across the state in communities, large, small, rural, urban. So for example, 99 of the 105 counties in Kansas now have pre-file programs to divert youth from the juvenile justice system entirely. And last year, 89% of those youth completed the diversion programs successfully. We know from the research that this is also an important health justice victory. According to studies in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine and the journal Pediatrics, youth incarceration leads to worse overall adult health. It leads to increased use of emergency rooms, increased time without health insurance, increased rates of depression, and increased rates of sexually transmitted infections. But the real reason that I wanted to talk about the juvenile justice reforms in Kansas today is this graph. This graph represents the number of kids who had gone missing in our state's juvenile justice system from 2011 to 2015. To me, when I look at this graph, I see a striking image of chaos. And I can't help but understand why, when people see things like this, they might start to lose faith in public policy, and why it could be so tempting to turn to zero-sum us-versus-them politics. But then there's this slide. So this slide shows the number of kids that had gone missing in our state juvenile justice system after those public policy reforms in 2016. Looking at these two slides side by side, I wonder how someone could argue that public policy doesn't work. Thank you. Yes, exactly. How could somebody look at a slide like this and not be inspired by the ability of public policy advocacy to solve big, complicated problems? So I love the story that these graphs tell, but I think the story here is actually about more than just public policy change. As an advocate, I have found it to be fairly easy to become deeply cynical to believe that power is not only a necessary component of an advocacy campaign, but at the end of the day, that power is the only part of an advocacy campaign. And I think eventually you can start to believe that advocacy doesn't really have any ability to change what's most important, which is the hearts and minds of our neighbors. But the juvenile justice reforms in Kansas have convinced me that advocacy really is able to do more than just win public policy changes. I have become convinced that advocacy has the power to also reshape the societal assumptions from which all of our public policy views grow. So before I wrap up, I want to read from a 2016 op-ed written by a state legislator in Kansas who I think it is probably fair to say had up to that point never agreed with anything that Kansas Appleseed had advocated for. But the legislator published this op-ed in 2016 while his colleagues in the legislature were having their final debates about the juvenile justice reform bill. So he writes, "With a career that includes 2 decades in law enforcement, I've never been labeled soft on crime. I've backed tough penalties on lawbreakers, and I always figured our approach to criminal justice was as good as it gets. But then I served as co-chairman of the Kansas Juvenile Justice Workgroup, and the experience changed my thinking about how to fight crime and how to help troubled youths turn around their lives. I'm now convinced we need a new approach, and I believe the Juvenile Justice Reform Bill shows us the way. When I was appointed to the workgroup, I was not supportive of reform. But as I pored over our state's data and compared it with research about how to reduce reoffending and improve outcomes, my thinking changed. Why? Because our current system is not aligned with the most effective strategies to keep youths from reoffending. The Juvenile Justice Reform Bill would modernize our approach to ensure it relies on proven, evidence-based methods." He concludes by saying, "Change is hard. It's much easier to stick to the status quo while spreading fear with falsehoods and doomsday predictions. I hope my colleagues will resist that temptation and support the juvenile justice reforms. Our children and all Kansans deserve no less." Yeah, I mean, it really is a very powerful, powerful op-ed. I really say all that to say thank you to all of you in this room for your support of advocacy. Your investments are restoring faith in public policy and ensuring that the good values of compassion and trustworthiness and inclusiveness, that these values will ultimately win out at the end of the day. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. For more information about Grantmakers in Health, visit us online at gih.org.